Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When President Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2009, no small number of Americans recount literally weeping for joy to see a day they thought they might never see, a black man taking on the nation's highest office. People spoke of a post-racial America. My guest today says race still matters, and he argues it's a big factor in how this president governs and how he is perceived. Americans have generally handled President Obama's race with care. But what role has it played? This hour on Point, racial politics and the Obama presidency. You can join the conversation. Has this president's race mattered? Does he have to negotiate America's racial politics, politics generally, in a different way than his predecessors? How do you see it? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in our studio is Randall Kennedy, professor at Harvard Law School, Barack Obama's alma mater. Randall Kennedy is author of Race, Crime, and the Law, and of Sellout, The Politics of Racial Betrayal. His new book is The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency. The New York Times calls him one of the nation's most incisive commentators on race, and his new book, powerful. Randall Kennedy, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks so much.
What were you thinking on, you pick it, election night, inauguration day, as this president, with his racial profile, stepped into power?
Well, I was enthralled, and I was crying along with millions of other people. It was a great moment. I hasten to add, though, that there is a sobering side to that story, too. I mean, after all, you know, why was I crying? Why were people saying, gosh, am I dreaming? They were saying that because the history of racial oppression has been such in the United States that it seemed miraculous that Americans would allow a black man to ascend to the presidency. That's a very sad story about our democracy. And a story that, continues to have repercussions.
Yes, but gosh, I mean, that is terrible history. It's hard history. It's got slavery and every kind of abuse in it. But that was surely a moment where people were entitled to say, if we had this history, maybe this is the moment when we are moving past it.
Yes, yes. And I don't begrudge that moment of exhilaration. It was a fabulous moment, and Obama's ascendancy to the White House says something really good about America. There's no question about that. Again, though, to flip it over, mm-hmm. to flip the other side of that rock, Barack Obama had to overcome his blackness in order to become president. It's not like his blackness didn't matter. He had to overcome his blackness. And remember, Barack Obama did not win the majority of white voters. He won enough white voters to ultimately prevail. But let's not forget that it was a closer election than people sometimes think.
Well, look at what Barack Obama did in racial terms to win that election, at what he's done in racial terms to govern, if that's the right way of putting it. But just to stick there for a moment, I mean, you're right, and we all remember that at that time of his election, his inauguration, whether it was the election night in Chicago or inauguration there on the Mall, that grand scene as always there in Washington, many prophesied or prayed that this election heralded a post-racial America. What about that, Randall Kennedy?
Well, there were people who did. I mean, if you just go back and listen to the radio, you go back and look at the TV, you go back and read what people were saying in the newspapers, there was the feeling of a millenarian moment that somehow we were going to wake up the next day and, all of the ghosts were going to be gone. That hasn't happened. And frankly, you know, we were all caught up in a moment. The presidency is obviously a very important post, but something that took so long to be created, something that's so ingrained in our national life, was not going to be washed away by one election or even two.
Barack Obama worked very hard in the campaign and in the White House, it seems to me, to very often, not always, but very often be kind of beyond race, speak to the nation from a point beyond race. But you write that everything about Obama is widely, insistently, almost unavoidably interpreted through the prism of race. What do you mean?
Well, I mean that, you know, at every level, when you think about Barack Obama, the fact that he is the first African-American president just, you know, hits you in the face. And so much of the discussion, either implicitly or explicitly, comes back to race. So right now, this very moment, the whole question of jobs, there are people, you think of, you know, Maxine Waters and others, some members of the Congressional Black Caucus, all over Barack Obama saying, yeah, you know, there's a job crisis throughout the nation, but in black communities, we're at depression levels, and we want Barack Obama to be more explicit in a policy aimed at black America. Well, as a matter of principle, there's nothing wrong with that. But as a matter of politics, that is a tricky proposition. He stays away from policies that have an explicit racial frame. And, you know, why does he do that? He does that because he is concerned and realistically concerned about claims of racial favoritism, claims of reverse discrimination, all that sort of thing.
We'll come to how the whole country looks at Barack Obama. What about African Americans and this president? I mean, how have they looked at him? How have they looked at his exercise of power and position to the extent that he represents? In many ways, aspirations of that population.
The great mass of black Americans are enthusiastic supporters of Barack Obama. And that has not changed, even though black Americans have been tremendously hurt by the financial and economic catastrophe that has beset the nation over the past several years. Black people were, you know, again, just very happy to see a black man become the leading American. Black Americans, by and large, are quite realistic about the limits of what he can do. Black people realize, in fact, that with respect to certain racial issues, he can probably do less than a white president can do. Precisely because there are going to be so many people who are going to be looking for, you know, any opening to charge him with racial favoritism. Mm-hmm. So he's going to steer clear of that. I think most black Americans realize that, and they accept that.
You say that his singular standing in the black community also stems in large part from personal characteristics. Like what?
Well, he's dignified. He's well-spoken. He's highly educated. Black people, a lot of black people love the fact that some of the president's detractors accuse him of being professorial, accuse him of being an elitist. And a lot of black people say, well, look at this. So, you know, after all of these years of black men being dogged for, you know, the baggy pants, for being, you know, brutal, for being, you know, for not being highly educated. Now this guy is being criticized for being too highly educated. Black people love Barack Obama. They don't have to make excuses for him. He's obviously an extremely capable, learned person. They love him for those things.
And then this, I mean, as there are points of which you're very critical in this book, but this you write, in the hearts and minds of most black Americans, indeed the overwhelming mass of African Americans, Barack Obama is the most admired person in the canon of black celebrity and accomplishment, surpassing Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali, Rosa Parks, Thurgood Marshall, and even Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes. Yes, because he has gone to the top. You know, everybody likes a winner. Everybody likes a winner. And Barack Obama has climbed to the top of American politics. We're talking about an American political system in which there have only been two popularly elected black governors in all of American history. There have been only three blacks, popularly elected black senators in all of American history. Yet here comes a guy who goes to the very top. They love him for that.
For African Americans, is that status secure, standing above Martin Luther King and Muhammad Ali and Booker, all the rest? Is that secure or is it contingent?
I think it's pretty secure. Are there things that he could do? Yeah, but it's pretty implausible. If he continues on his current trajectory, 50 years from now, when Ebony Magazine has its list of, you know, among black people, who's at the top in the hearts and minds of black people, Barack Obama will be there. And one other thing I should mention, very important, Barack and Michelle Obama. One thing that has been very helpful to Barack Obama is the person who is at his side, his wife, Michelle Obama, from the South Side, black woman with deep roots in the African American story. Black people love the fact that on the president's arm is a black woman.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Obama and the politics of race in America. My guest is Harvard Law School professor Randall Kennedy, author of the new book, The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency. Randall Kennedy joins me in the studio. Let's listen to just a little bit of what's out there. This president, like all presidents, get it from all sides, but there are extra angles on this presidency. Here's just last Tuesday, Democratic Congresswoman Maxine Waters of California spoke at a town hall meeting in Detroit sponsored by the Congressional Black Caucus.
We want to give the president every opportunity to show what he can do and what he's prepared to lead on. We want to give him every opportunity, but our people are hurting. The unemployment is unconscionable. We don't know what the strategy is. We don't know why on this trip that he's in the United States now, he's not in any black communities. We don't know that.
Black impatience there from Congresswoman Maxine Waters. Let's spin the radio dial a little bit here. Here is Rush Limbaugh on his radio show last week, making a crack about the president while describing a new kind of Oreo cooking that's coming out. And you can hear him here ultimately toying with race.
You've got three of the chocolate wafers, and then you've got the white vanilla the cream, and then there's a chocolate cream. So you've got three, the thing is this Oreo on it, the wafer, and then you got the white cream, then you got another chocolate wafer, then you got the chocolate cream, and then you got the bottom wafer. The triple double Oreo. You wait, it isn't going to be long before it's going to be called the Orbamio or something like this. Well, it's a biracial cookie here.
The Orbamio from Rush Limbaugh there. A new cookie coming out, and he's all over it, tying colors of cream and colors of human beings, race. Randall Kennedy, take on those two. There's Maxine Waters with her impatience. Come on, president. And it kind of unsaid, come on, black president. And then there's Rush Limbaugh, who even now, all these years into this presidency, can't resist tweaking, toying, playing with race when it comes to this president.
Well, that's a great illustration of the persistence of the color line and the dilemma that confronts Barack Obama. On the one hand, there are going to be some people like Representative Waters who are going to, you know, frankly, be angry with him for not being stronger and more explicit in pushing public policies that would be helpful to black America. And then, on the other hand, you're going to have people like Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck who are going to, at every opportunity, engage sometimes in a playful, funny way, sometimes in a quite malevolent, vicious way. You're going to attack him and, you know, play the race card against him. He has to confront this. This is the dilemma that he faces. And, you know, the way that he's typically tried to deal with this is to have to use a very non-racialized framework for dealing with problems. He's tried to distance himself from racial issues. He's tried to, you know, largely be above the racial fray.
So we'll talk about what that means in terms of governing and outcomes. We'll talk about white attitudes and receptions of this president. But let's stick with African-American for a moment. I mean, Maxine Waters there at least is really talking policy. She wants policy action on these fronts. He's had more critical criticism than that, or more sort of personal criticism than that, I would say, in the sort of Cornel West, Tavis Smiley quadrant of the black American community. What about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Was she talking so much about policy? It seemed to me that a lot of her talk had to do with, frankly, symbolism. She wanted him to go into more black areas. She
don't just tour white America on your black bus. Tour black America.
Right. Go to, you know, go to a predominantly black area.
Detroit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or when you frame your policy, she wanted race to be, you know, on the face of it. So a lot of his detractors from, let's say, the black side, and again, I think they're frankly rather marginal, but to the extent that they are there, it's been a lot of what they have to say has to do with the stylistics of it. They want him to be discernibly blacker in his political approach. And, you know, he has he's been unwilling to go along with that. I would quickly, you know, add it's not accidental that, you know, he made it to the top in a polity that has majority white voters. You know, I mean, you have to ask yourself at one point, you know, do you want to win the White House or do you not? If you're not that interested in winning the White House, then, yeah, sure, it might be, you know, then, you know, if you don't have the discipline of electoral politics confronting you, you can say what you want and you can be more explicit and you can be more candid. On the other hand, if you're trying to win the White House, yeah, you might have to engage in, you know, what one might call diplomacy, engage in euphemism, and, you know, go around the bend in order to get to where you want to get to.
So you quote a headline from the website TheRoot.com, and you quote it kind of admiringly in reference to Cornel West and Tavis Smiley, the talk show host who's been very outspoken. You quote the headline that says, "Who died and made Tavis king?" But what about it? Let's look at it racially. You get a black president. It's a historic moment, but he has to walk carefully, as you say. He has to be realistic. Is it possible that net-net, it turns out worse for African Americans to have an African American president?
No. Yeah, well, you have to make a judgment. And I think that, the great mass of black Americans have made the judgment that the symbolic, that the psychological benefit of having a black man in the White House is actually worth a lot, worth more than the things that his detractors are criticizing him for, you know, for not doing. Now, some people might say, a lot of people have said, that's mere symbolism. Well, you know, sitting at the counter and being able to eat that hamburger was symbolism too. Sitting anywhere you want on the bus is symbolism too. I call that, you know, the substance of symbolism. Barack Obama will probably not bequeath to the United States any major new initiatives with respect to race policy. That's not going to be his legacy. But what will be his legacy is the fact that a black man was able to make it to the very top of American politics. That is something that day by day by day is having effects on people not only in this country but all over the world. There are lots of kids all over whose very conception of themselves, their conception of what's possible, their conception of who matters in American life has been changed by seeing a black man step off of Air Force One and the American military snap to it and give the snappy salute.
I guess on the day when the big new statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is unveiled in Washington is not a day, that is today, is not a day to discount symbolism of marches or bridge crossings or sitting at counters or refusing to go to the back of the bus. There's the black side of the ledger, as you put it. Let's move to the white side and how that historically empowered portion of the American population has received this president. Begin to take us into your analysis on that side of the ledger, Randall Kennedy.
Well, again, it's a complicated story. On the one hand, again, it's a very important thing to remember, and I think a lot of people want to forget. Barack Obama did not win the majority of white voters. He won enough when, to ultimately prevail because there was a huge outpouring of non-white voters. And so you had,
And he won an overall majority of the vote, unlike any Democratic winner
in decades. He did. But, I mean, again, the point is, and I think it's a key point, for especially with the upcoming election, he did not win the majority of the white vote, even though in 2008 he had everything going for him. He had the perfect storm going for him. And even then, he did not win the majority of the white vote.
We should say that he's a Democrat, and a lot of whites are now Republicans. Maybe that's a chunk of the explanation.
Yes, and let me just thank you for saying that. I'm not saying that all opposition to Barack Obama is based on race. Far from it. There are all sorts of reasons why people are, did not vote for Barack Obama or are now against Barack Obama. Partisanship, ideological views, religious views, just to name three important ones that immediately come to mind. So race isn't everything. But is race something in the opposition to Obama? Yes, it is. It's hard to tease out because quite often people don't want to say that they're against somebody, at least in part, on racial grounds. Although, an appreciable number of people are willing to say that. There are still millions of Americans who will tell pollsters, no, I will never vote for a black man.
And you shouldn't forget that. You're moving present tense now because current opposition, you write in the book, to Barack Obama at this point in his presidency is overwhelmingly white. You say of a fact that no one can reasonably dispute from the poll numbers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you take a look at who's against Barack Obama, overwhelmingly, it's white, and certainly among his strongest detractors, it's overwhelmingly white. Does race have something to do with that? Yes.
So let's dig into that. Look at the whole spectrum of white response to this president of color, and where do you see evidence that we have evolved in some direction in terms of racial attitudes, and where do you see evidence that we have not?
Well, on Inauguration Day, a day when, there were some people who did not vote for Barack Obama, but who said, this is a wonderful day, and, this on Inauguration Day, we're all joining together. There were a lot of people who took that position, but you just played someone, pretty important personage, Rush Limbaugh, said on Inauguration Day, he hoped the man failed. He wasn't alone.
But I'm sure Rush Limbaugh will say, not because he's black, Randall.
Well, yeah, of course he will say that. The question is that true? And I don't think it's just because he's black, but is blackness one of the ingredients of the opposition in the far right wing of the United States? Yes, it is. Glenn Beck on that episode a couple of summers ago when Barack Obama criticized the Cambridge police officer for arresting Professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. in his home. Barack Obama did not accuse that police officer of engaging in any sort of racial discrimination. In fact, he expressly said that he didn't have any facts that would lead to such an allegation. All he said was, I think that the police officer, given what he then knew, was behaving stupidly. What did Glenn Beck say in response to that? Ah, this is yet another indication that Barack Obama hates white people, that he has a problem with white culture, that he is racist in his views and anti-white. As far as I'm concerned, given the situation, that suggested that Glenn Beck himself had he himself was exhibiting racial animus in his attack on Barack Obama.
What about this? And this is just in recent days. And this is from a U.S. senator who Barack Obama has exchanged friendly words with, Senator Tom Coburn, Oklahoma, conservative. But then here he was talking with the Tulsa World. And this is not on tape as far as I know. So let me read something. And they were talking about, he was asked if Barack Obama's show that he wants to destroy the country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this gets put out there. And Senator Coburn said, no, I don't think. He said, he's a very bright man, but think about his life and think about what he was exposed to and what he saw in America. He said, his intent isn't to destroy, it's to create dependency because it worked so well for him. He said, I don't say that critically, but look at people for what they are. He says, I don't think he doesn't love our country. I think he does. As an African-American male, coming through the progress of everything he experienced, he got tremendous benefit through a lot of these programs. So he believes in them. I just don't believe they work overall. In the long run, they don't help the country. But he doesn't know that because his life experience is something different. So it's very important not to get mad at the man. And I understand his philosophy. There's nothing wrong with his philosophy other than it's goofy and wrong. But that doesn't make him a bad person. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a lot to throw on the table. But he's got Barack Obama there as a product of a culture of dependency.
Well, I mean, you know, in the particulars of this case, he just seems wrong given Barack Obama's biography. I would not count that. That's actually a rather complicated case. And, you know, when we're talking about race, again, it's important not to overdo. The world's a complicated place. There are all sorts of things going on. I don't want to be a person that that exaggerates mm-hmm. the racial angle.
Mm-hmm.
What I do want to say, and what seems to me to be just, you know, it should be, in my view, beyond controversy, race is playing a role in the objection to Barack Obama. This whole thing about, you know, where was he born? Is he a Muslim? Some of that is just sublimated racism. Some of that is people know that they can't say things about race like they would have been able to 75 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they're seizing on other things that they think that they can say, but race is really at the bottom.
What about when it comes right down to should we or should we not cut a deal with this president on the national budget? Does race come into that?
With some people. Some people clearly want to bring him down no matter what. They have a scorched earth policy. And one of the reasons that they are so adamant, one of the things that sticks in their craw so much, they really do view him as illegitimate. They view him as illegitimate, not just somebody with whom, not just a political adversary. Some people view him as
him, not his ideology.
That's
not
right. They view him. They view him. Him. They can't get over it. And what they can't get over is in their mind's eye, the specter. It's like a nightmare come true for some of these people.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Obama and the politics of race in America. Randall Kennedy is my guest, a professor at Harvard Law School, author of the new book, The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency. And I'm sorry to keep everybody waiting. I will go to calls right here. Just a couple things from online first. Listeners there, Greg says, ugh, Race has nothing to do with anything. Can't we get past it and judge by the content of character? Quoting Martin Luther King right there. Sarah says President Obama is not simply white enough or black enough to enable others to neatly pigeonhole him as one of us or one of them. Sarah writes, this is his great gift to American politics and to people like my kids who are not Caucasian. And here's Jay Measure writes, unlike any other president of the United States, Barack Obama carries the burden of being all to everyone. This position is impossible. Those who depended on him to make changes could never be pleased with his efforts, and those who dislike him never will approve of anything he does. Bruce in Evansville, Indiana, Bruce, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Bruce.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yes, sir.
I'm listening to your guest, and I guess I'm not going to presume or assume anything. But if he's an African American,
he is.
He says that Martin Luther King is below Barack Obama. It's kind of like a professor coming to a student and saying the student is better than the professor. In that, Martin Luther King set the table for the world to understand about race, for the world to understand about justice, for the world to understand about peace, and he laid a foundation for Barack Obama to exist. To even desire, and to even have a door open to him, any type of door, based on the fact that Martin Luther King this week is going to be receiving a statue. I last time I looked, there's not too many African American statues other than soldiers. On the Washington Mall.
Hey, Bruce, I will pick that up with Randall Kennedy, who, yes, is African American. I'm sure he'll say in the end he doesn't really want to get into too big a fight over, you know, who's the better black man. But let me just, while I've got you, may I ask your race, Bruce?
African American.
What do you think about the reception? What do you think about the reception of this president by this nation as president, as a black president?
Well, the media has dubbed him a black president, so automatically you put race into it. You have a Congress who voted in a number of people under a particular political party that want him to be a one-term president, not necessarily because of his politics, because they haven't even heard anything he said. They've been blocking everything he's tried to do, but because he's black. And the reality is our nation is still not overcome racism. There's glaring racism. If you look at what happened with the the whole foreclosure debacle, where they were selling insurance on the hopes that people wouldn't be able to pay their mortgages. They knew doggone well they couldn't, because they hedged bets on it, put the money up, got insurance money based on the fact that these people weren't going to...
Bruce, last question for you. You say the media dubbed him a black president, but didn't Barack Obama embrace that identity in his campaign for the presidency? Didn't he embrace it himself?
He's black. If I walk anywhere, I'm black. Anywhere I go, they're going to see I'm black. He's black.
I appreciate your call, Bruce. Let me take it to Randall Kennedy first. You hear the pushback there on putting Barack Obama out front of Martin Luther King.
Well, I can understand that. I was simply making a comment about, you know, in a sense, my sense of where at the moment he stands in the hearts and minds of black people. I just think if you just, you know, went to 100 people or 1,000 people, black people, let's say in New York City, you know, who's the black person who you most admire? I think that Barack Obama would lead the list. That's all I was saying.
And I guess you're not arguing with Bruce that race has been a factor in opposition to some of the president's initiatives.
No, not arguing. I will say this on the question of, you know, the president's identity. You know from my book that one of the things that was very important in Barack Obama's political campaign and very important in his political biography is he called himself black. Now, he didn't have to. He could have called himself multiracial. He could have called himself, something else. But he called himself black, or he called himself African-American, though his mother's white.
Right.
And that turn, in my view, is very important. has been very important.
What about our listener online? The comment, race has nothing to do with anything. Can't we get over it and judge by the content of character?
Well, that's a nice aspiration. That's a nice aspiration. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that race does have something to do with, you know, American politics.
Matt, in Traverse City, Michigan, Matt, thanks for calling. You're on with Randall Kennedy.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
If I understand the professor's position correctly, in terms of promoting social justice, the most important element is the election of a partly black president. So my question for the professor, would that be equally true if Herbert Kane or Clarence Thomas or Colin Powell had been elected president?
Oh, I think that you misperceive my position. I don't think that, you know, everything rises with the racial identity of a candidate. And I certainly, if you're, you know, your insinuation is, would I be against, you know, a Herman Cain or a Clarence Thomas or I forget who else you mentioned? Yes, I would very much be against them, because I think that their policies would be bad for the country. I don't, you know, support anybody, you know, on the, you know, simply because of their, you know, racial identity or gender identity or anything of the sort. One has to make a calculation as to whether one thinks that their policies would be good for the country as a whole.
Teresa, New Haven, Connecticut. Matt in Traverse City, thanks for your call. Teresa, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that, of course, you know, I think our society is very polarized politically. But I think there's been kind of a further splintering, and I've seen it within the Democratic Party. I've seen members of my own family, and I know that's anecdotal, and plus people I've met who have been longtime Democrats. I mean, people who have voted Democratic in every single election. I mean, for Mondale. And would never think of anything else, who in this last election voted Republican, even though they were appalled by the vice presidential pick. And, you know, again, these were Roosevelt Democrats, people who believed in the New Deal and all of those policies. And then suddenly it was this complete about-face. And, I've seen it again in my own family, people I knew and really kind of grew up with their ideals, and then suddenly it was like this huge slap in the face of, wait a minute, you know, what happened? I don't understand.
Sorry, Teresa, please.
I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry, please go ahead.
And I've watched sort of since then this slow justification. I don't like this, and I don't like that, and I don't like this, and I don't like that. And they'll now call themselves independent. But yet the policies I hear them justifying are things that are just things that are not consistent with who they've ever been.
Well, let me ask you, though. I mean, that had to be a minority of people, because this candidate did make it to the White House. So maybe some did, as you say. But what about the way Barack Obama has comported himself as president? Randall Kennedy says, look, he's been very low-key about racial identity as president. You can see it. It's right there. It's right there in his familiarity with black colloquialisms and traditions, and it's there in his family, and he doesn't move away from it, but he doesn't put it in your face either. Has that won over your relatives,
no,
Teresa?
No, I don't hear, honestly, one positive comment at all. It's as if there is really nothing now that he can do right. And there's a segment of the population I expect that from. I mean, I just think there are some people he's never going to please. But these are people I would expect to have given him a chance. And I almost think that, you know, again, this is, I don't think these are people who consider themselves to have been bothered by race. And it's almost as if there was something kindling within them that somehow this sparked.
Yep.
And uncomfortableness.
Teresa, we've got it. Let me take it to Randall Kennedy. It leaves me wondering, Randall Kennedy, what rides on this presidency? There is talk now, with the economy as bad as it is, a lot of things haven't worked out here. There's been a lot of opposition, and you can say obstruction and all the rest. Nevertheless, it is, look at his approval ratings. It is certainly possible this would be a one-term president. Mm-hmm. He's a very skilled politician. He may very well pull it out, bring it back, go on to glory. But he may not. If this first African-American president becomes a one-term president, becomes a president with the kind of, you know, Jimmy Carter coloring, who people, for everything that he's done since then, all the ways he's, you know, redeemed and rebuilt and everything else, still, it's a kind of shorthand for a mess, a failure. What does that mean for race relations in this country, if that should be the path we go down?
Well, it'll certainly put a very sour note on the Obama story. It would certainly punctuate the Obama story in a very negative way, and it'll, you know, have negative repercussions. I still think, however, let's assume that that happens. It still will be the case that 50 years from now, 100 years from now, people will look back and will say that Barack Obama's ascendancy to the White House showed Americans that America was open to black people rising to the top. I still think, even if he's a one-term president, his election will, in my view, have long-term positive consequences.
He went to your school for law school, Harvard Law School, signed up for one of your classes, then didn't end up taking it. Do you know him personally?
No.
Can you, or do you think you can read him? We all see this president. We watch him. We watch the muscles working in his face when he's in all kinds of circumstances. Can you read him on his racial reception as president? Can you project? Do you have any take on how he's taking on board his reception by this nation that elected him in those terms, whether he's sitting there grinding his teeth saying, if I were white, this would be easier, or something else?
I think that Barack Obama faces the same sort of dilemmas at a much higher level, of course, and he's scrutinized so much more than anyone else. But he faces many of the same dilemmas that other black men face in elite institutions. He's a pioneer, just like, you know, black CEOs at, you know, Fortune 500 companies are pioneers, or blacks who are partners in big law firms are pioneers, and they've got to do a very difficult. They have to confront a very difficult situation. On the one hand, if they lean over this way, they're going to be attacked. If they lean over the other way, they're going to be attacked.
But he's got the kind of identity of a people riding on it. They've got their careers riding on that.
Yeah, and he's got a lot riding. And imagine that. Imagine the burden that he feels. Any president, again, to get back to my comment about, you know, he has the extra burden of blackness along with all of the extraordinary burdens that any president has to carry.
What Randall Kennedy calls the persistence of the color line. Lynchburg, Tennessee, Tom's calling. Hi, Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I do think that we have a huge amount of racism attached to this president. I have people who call him the half-Negro president and don't know a thing about his policies. And what all of this race issue ends up being is a diversion to actually fix the problems that our country got into. And I see him not as an FDR, because he can't be. He didn't come from that class that could battle that class of people that put us in this problem. But he has that extra added weight and baggage of being black, and anybody from the South that looks at some black population that's not doing well will attribute that to President Obama, whether or not it applies.
Do you think he's helping us get past that, Tom? Do you think this president...
I don't think he is, because he's not strong enough of a president to battle the forces in the proper way. You know, FDR did it, but he had a very elite background. He was one of the... the elites at that time, and he had the power to do things, whereas Barack Obama's power is constantly being sucked because of issues like this. And we totally forget the reasons that we got into this mess. NPR did a whole show on how many convictions we had during this financial meltdown 40 times bigger than the last one, and we haven't seen those.
Tom, we're up against the clock here. Forgive me, but I've just got a couple of minutes, and I want to wrap with Randall. Can I appreciate your call? You hear what Tom's observation? Could this president, Barack Obama, could he have handled his race differently, more effectively somehow in office?
I think that the president could do a better job of using something that he really does have as president and that is quite unique to the presidency. He has a platform for public education that I don't think that he has used sufficiently.
On racial issues?
On racial issues, on all sorts of issues. But, you know, we're talking about race. I think on the race issue, too.
Because he's afraid of the third rail of race himself,
sure,
even as he embodies it?
Yeah. I feel for him because, you know, if he were to attempt this, it would be dangerous politically. Anytime he talks about race, it's very dangerous politically.
But if you don't, if it's there and you don't call it out, there's maybe some danger in that.
Yeah,
too?
There's a danger either way you go. He's a very cautious man. You have to give him credit. He did make it to the White House. So he obviously knows a good bit about, you know, American political culture. I do think that he could do sometimes a better job of educating the public to various issues, including the persistence of the race line. Maybe in the future he will do so.
Maybe. Time is long. He's young. A lot still to be told in the story of Barack Obama and President Barack Obama. Randall Kennedy's new book is The Persistence of the Color Line, Racial Politics and the Obama Presidency. Law professor at Harvard Law School. Randall Kennedy, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook.